What up, fam? It's your boy, Z-Dog MD, and your boy, ID-Dog, Dr. James Riddle, University of Michigan professor, clinical professor of infectious diseases. Mm-hmm. That's a mouthful. Who did you have to sleep with to get that job? Come on.
I don't want to say.
I knew it. See, so professionally correct. It's a different kind of PC. So, for those of you guys who don't know, Jamie is my brother-in-law. His wife is my wife's sister. And they are visiting for Thanksgiving. We just did a hike at Red Rock.
It was awesome.
No one was killed. The last time I did a hike at Red Rock, I got this scar on the same hike that we did. But this time, even though we were with your teenage sons who can basically, they're like goats. They were just like up these hills. We did not die. No one got a rotator cuff or knee injury because we're old.
As far as we know.
As far as we know. But we were talking about like, well, you know, we did a show the other night on flu shots and it got a bunch of engagement. We were thinking, you know what? Let's talk about stuff that we care about deeply. And Jamie was like, you know, everybody's talking about the patient experience. And what is that? Especially from a physician point of view, what does it mean? Like, is giving patients this great experience something that only administrators want to do to make money? Or is it something that's going to destroy medical providers? Because can we even do it? And we know in nursing, treating a hospital like a hotel has been something they've been pushing for a long time, and it is destroying our nurses. They hate it. They really hate it. Everything from Studer with the scripting. Hi, I'm
Mary Jane,
your nurse. Is there anything I can do to make your stay at
General Hospital?
Did you see that? The administration's trying to censor us with bad Wi-Fi getting cut off. And so we thought, well, let's talk about what we know about the patient experience, why it matters, how we can make it better without wrecking the provider experience. And you had some thoughts on this because you've traveled around kind of looking at this stuff.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of a bunch of different ways you can think about it. Mm. The way I was thinking about it is one, logistics. Mm. Like, you know, just how does a patient, when they first come in to the clinic or a hospital, do they have a place to park? Do they know where to go? It seems very simple, but it doesn't often happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and those things... You know, I remember going to a conference. I'm going to come over here and turn around because you're so bright.
It's the whiteness.
It's the whiteness and the brownness together. There's something about it. the experience that patients have varies over the course of their interaction with the healthcare system. And some of it is phone calls. Some of it is parking. Some of it is did they get their turkey sandwich and Dilaudid. Some of it is the conversation they have with their doctors. Some of it's interaction with nurses and front staff. The billers and coders actually that interact with patients have a huge effect because you can see, I've seen these graphs of patient happiness over experience time. So here they are. They make a phone call. They're having to wait. Happiness drops. Then they see the doc. Happiness goes up. But then the doc is brusque and is staring at the computer. Happiness goes down. And then at the end of the visit, maybe they're doing well and they get a call or a message or a mail from the billing people and they get this bill and then it just plummets because there's no explanation. It's very jacked up. So there's a lot of things that can... in my front yard, I don't jam in my front yard enough. Don't you think?
No,
I don't think the Z-Pack really knows my front yard, which is good because then they'll start stalking me and I'll end up having to borrow Logan's gun.
Wasn't that a run?
Logan's run. I love on with this thing. Why is the internet so janky? There we go. So you know it shouldn't be doing that. We're trying to figure out our internet. We're gonna walk over here. We're gonna get into the weeds, people. This is like guerrilla style. There we go. All right, so. Let's read a couple comments here. Let's see. Patients think that when they're in the hospital that you need to wait on them hand and foot like they're in the Carlton Ritz or the Ritz-Carlton as the case may be. Mm-hmm. Hospital I work at even lets them go outside to smoke with chest tubes. So this is a kind... We're going to keep walking. This is a kind of insanity to me where it is like you're treating it like a hotel. But you got to understand where this comes from. The regular patient experience in our healthcare system is crappy bad. And as somebody who's trying to obtain healing, most people are, some are just trying to obtain Dilaudid, it's very counterproductive when you're miserable. Now, you've been around and you've seen some things that maybe work, like Cleveland Clinic,
Yeah, so I think there are some sort of best practices people could look at. So, for example, when you go to some place like the Cleveland Clinic, they do a lot of things really well. They have this place to park. There's somebody who greets you at the door and tells you where to go. You can see multiple specialists sort of all in the same day. It all sort of works together. But then, you know, there are things that Cleveland Clinic, you know, may not be capable of doing as a result of this, you know, sort of intense sort of paying attention to the patient experience. So, you know, the amount of clinical research or maybe the different types of services they may or may not have, you know, available. So I think that's the challenge is an academic center. Can you replicate, for example, what happens at the Cleveland Clinic or Mayo Clinic? And people are trying to do that. But I think what administrators need to understand is that there is a payoff. I mean, there will be something that you will lose,
yeah.
You know, if you try to put huge amounts of resources into this type of activity.
So one of the thinking, I'm going to squat down because my back hurts after this hike. One of the sort of trade-offs that we talked about. So Robbie Pearl, the former CEO of Kaiser's Medical Group, had said, you know, the academic centers, for example, are really good at product differentiation. So they can only offer things that academic centers can do, but they're not particularly efficient or good with customer service.
Right.
Whereas you can look at multi-specialty private groups and they'll be really good with intimacy and customer service, but maybe not good with differentiating. They don't offer anything different and their efficiency isn't maybe that great.
And then medical education.
And medical education becomes a piece of that. And then you look at like the Kaisers and the integrated systems, they're very efficient and they'll get you through cheaply and efficiently, but also not great at differentiating themselves, and the intimacy piece is plus or minus. So the question is, can you have it all?
Right.
And some say no, choose two, right? Or some will say, well, you can be kind of good at all three, but you can't master all three. Now, my feeling is I'm an optimist. I think if you figure out what it is that actually patients need to experience, it's not that hard to do it. It's not necessarily getting a warm blanket and all of that. It's being heard. It's feeling like their team is actually collaborating. And Cleveland does a great job of that, right? Because everything's under one theoretical roof. So you're not like wondering, well, why? And they're all on one EHR. And those kind of things you can't put a price on. It's really a nice to know that your specialists and your primary docs and everybody, they're all deeply cohesed. Now, again, like I was recently in the ER with my kid, and I had a great experience because they were super nice. They got me in quickly. They were kind. Those kind of things mattered. I knew they were going to be competent sewing up her chin because, like, if they weren't, I would push them aside and do it myself. But what added it to me was the fact that they seemed to actually care and they treated my child with a good deal of dignity and had fun and that kind of thing. So each patient has their own sort of thing. But now you were talking about some other stuff with this, like the idea that how can a healthcare provider work in a system where you're constantly trying to buff up the turd that is the patient experience, right? Like where you know, maybe it's not a system that's optimized for it. So instead we do things like, well, let's make it like a hotel and let's, you know, do this and we'll put up billboards on the road that say 4-minute average wait time at our ER and that kind of thing. And, you know, you can tell from the comments already, we don't like that as providers. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
It's hard. It's a real balancing act because, you know, for example, I work in an academic medical center. I have all of these sort of stresses sort of that are pulling at you. You want to, you know, move forward with the clinical research aspect of your job. You want to move forward with, feel like you're doing a good job with medical education. And you want to provide, you know, the ideal, patient experience. And on top of that, you want to be a good caring physician.
Right.
I mean, that's
heaven
sort of
forbid
the essence
right.
of our job. And so, you know, how do you juggle all those things? It's very difficult. I don't purport to have all the answers. I definitely think there are things you can do. And that's sort of start to flip it and really truly as an administrator, look at it from the patient's perspective. You know, what do they go through? And as much as I hate talking about these Toyota things, that I think that is a decent approach. So going to the Gemba, they say, you know, looking at it from what the patients go through at each step of the way and then trying to perfect that in some
You know what's interesting about that? Here, let's walk a little. I'm just trying to mix it up, mostly because my knees are hurting. Here we go. Look at this angle. completely useless. Oh, wait, no, wait. You're too damn tall, Jamie Riddle, and I'm too short. No, you can't do that. Oh, you're sitting. Perfect. This is great. I'm like fully standing. The problem with the Toyota approach with healthcare is that we get very defensive.
Yeah.
So when one of the Bobs comes in as a consultant and is like, well, we did a Gemba walk, and what we found is that your patients are miserable here, 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 and here. And then, you know, Jane over here is telling them this, and then Bob is telling them this, and then they're going here and they're getting pissed off. And you're like, you're getting pissed off, okay? Do you understand how hard it is to do our job when the patients are showing up at any old time for their appointment, but we still have to fit them in, and everybody's like, make them happy, but we're like, we can't even barely keep them alive because we're understaffed. And it's also just we had figured out a pattern that works for us, and now you want to tell us it's all different.
Right.
So the question is, how do we collaborate with the business czars? Yeah. Because it's a balance. Business, art, and science of medicine is a balance.
Yeah.
And you can see by the angry faces, people just hate that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Let's take a comment here. Left the hospital and went to dialysis, have Sundays off, yet still serving the patient and making them happy. Not good for educating the disease process, though. So, you know, and again, time is a big problem in the patient experience. Because if we don't have time, you know, like I knew, like when I was in the ER the other day with my kid, that doc had a little time. It wasn't that busy, so I had a high touch experience. But it's equally possible that you'll have the opposite because things are crazy, you know. Let's see what else we got here. People seem to think that the philosophy that the customer is always right applies to healthcare. This could not be further from the truth. The patient is not always right, and the rest of the comments cut off. That's Adam Miller. So Adam, here's the thing. You know, what is your take on the customer's always right? I'm going to give you this.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll hold it.
Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I learned actually early on in my career that if you ignore what the customer is telling you, in this case, the patient, you do so at your peril, quite honestly, because often, you know, even though you're the doctor, you've had all this training, residency, medical school, etc., the patient really knows themselves pretty well. And so if I have a patient who comes to me and says, Dr. Riddle, you know, I feel like I need X, Y, or Z test, and I wasn't necessarily thinking of that test. If it's sort of not harmful and not like something that's going to be particularly costly or, you know, be risky in any way, I order it. And because I have found the patients actually are often right. And so even though so you sort of have to have some hubris and take yourself down a notch occasionally, I found when dealing with patients.
So, you know, this is like a classic example of the art of medicine. So when do you say, you know what, ordering the test because the patient really wants it is actually a way to get a better outcome, even if you don't think that test is indicated, because it alleviates this much anxiety, or maybe the patient's actually right,
yeah,
and they know something. So we do tend to have quite a bit of hubris in healthcare where we think we're always right. You're right, the customer is not always right in healthcare, but not listening to the customer, which, by the way, I really hate that term for patients, not listening to the people that are coming to you for help is just bad medicine.
Yeah.
So it's a balance. Let's see here. The absolute ideal patient experience would be when the doctor doesn't overbook himself and gets to me 2 hours after arrival, and he doesn't rush to me and is eager to take the journey with me to find the root cause. Elizabeth Harbison. So you were just talking about this. Tell me about this a little bit.
So I had an experience just in clinic the other day where, you know, I have a panel of patients, about 8 I see in a half day. And I had the 4 o'clock patient show up at 2 o'clock, you know, the 3 o'clock patient show up at 2:30. The 4:30 patient came early but needed help because they were in a wheelchair. All these patients needed my attention sort of all at the same time. And then my 3:30 patient showed up exactly on time and was really mad that I was late seeing them. And I felt bad about it. But at the same time, I don't know how I could have dealt with that any better than I did, because as a physician, you can only be in one place at one time. And so it's a challenge. It's a balancing act. I think probably patients on some level don't maybe know what goes on behind the scenes and what some of the other issues that we have with our time.
And you know, and the question is, should they know that, or should we develop our behind the scenes? God dang it! What the hell? How about this? We're just going to change it everywhere we go. And this upshot is never a good idea, but I'm going to do it anyways. So, you know, this idea that we should have processes that are actually more amenable to this, and maybe being 2 hours late is not... You know, the problem is some patients have problems with transportation.
Right.
Some patients, it's the only time they can come.
That's right.
And some patients are just dicks, and they literally don't care about that. They're just going to come when they come, and there's an entitlement sense. And how do you weed all those out? You can't in a process that's easy. That's the problem. So you treat it on a case by case, and then you end up making the person who was on time, who was diligent, who's there, you know, to get care at the right time, very upset. And you know that interaction ended up going okay in the end, but the thing is it hurts us a little bit, right? Because we want to make our patients happy to the degree that we would want to be treated. You know, it's a golden rule type of thing.
You want to create that ideal patient experience any way you can.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't know if there's one perfect way to do it.
I don't think there can be. Now, one of the interesting things that you see some of these administrators and bigger organizations doing is they do this kind of walkthrough where they chart out a patient's sort of experience over the time and contact points with the system. And it's enlightening to see.
Yeah.
And you know, as a patient, all of us become patients. When we're in one of those nadirs where the experience is bad, like it really colors everything. And it doesn't have to be that way. Like this is not inevitable. That's the point. So we can make tweaks to our system and just the way we communicate with each other and with our patients. Also, the way we treat each other is reflected.
Yeah.
Right? If we're a dick to the specialist that we consulted and we throw them under the bus, or the specialist throws the primary care doc under the bus, or they act like they haven't communicated, or what any of that stuff, man, that leads to bad patient experience, bad medical care, bad outcomes, all those things. So why can't we work on that? I mean, that's a health 3.0 construct.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
The patient is right because they're educated by Dr. Google.
It's
not far from the truth. But see, here's the thing. Like sometimes, and again, I'm playing devil's advocate. Normally, you guys know I'm like, Dr. Google needs to die. He needs to lose his medical license if he ever had one. And he needs to be stopped. But the thing is, there's a reason that people go to Dr. Google. It's because that's the way we get information nowadays. And also, a lot of times, we don't communicate well with our patients to answer the questions they're really asking because we're not listening.
Right.
So then they go to Dr. Google and they find out they have cancer, which they don't have. Now they've got to come back to you and there's an overlay of panic and anxiety. Now they're asking for all these tests. And when you don't give them, they're getting upset and belligerent, and then you're misreading all of this. So we have to, you know, what we did at Turntable is we had the computer in front of us together, and we would do the Google searches together. You know, try to pre-disaster the relationship by going, oh, this is what Google's going to tell you, all right? Now, don't panic, because this is what it means. And also, Jenny McCarthy is insane.
But that's part of creating that ideal patient experience, having the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we really overlook. And again, administrators want to pack in the patients one after another. And as a physician, you know, you struggle with that balance.
I mean, that the time is such a key thing. Let's go over here. Why not? Time is such a key thing that we don't have. Now, see, Linda Lindstrom says, that's bright. This was a huge mistake. Let's put it over here. And we're going to do this. Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Right.
Science. There's no science at all. Linda Lindstrom says, I can't even leave my son when he's there. I'm expected to do all the feeding, bathing, toileting. When a CNA watched him for 20 minutes, she brought him back with crap down his leg. Las Vegas leaves so much to be desired. Well, so again, like, is it an unreasonable expectation that the staff manage the child if you leave the child there well? And, you know, what are our expectations and what is our capacity for staffing? And all those things weigh into the experience. And clearly Laura had a horrible experience.
Right.
And again, does this directly affect like whatever the patient, the kid was there for? Probably not. But it affects her perception of the care, which is important. Let's take a look here. Have to treat my patients like they're rock stars, otherwise face bad reviews. Reducing my intelligence not to offend them is hard. Anti-vaccine patients who offer me essential oils are my favorite. Eye-rolling mom. Yale Robson Kushner. So Yale brings up a good point, especially in pediatrics. Like this kowtowing to insane belief misunderstanding science and having to do it or else getting ripped a new one on Yelp.
I don't think that can be part of our practice, quite honestly.
No.
I ran into the same thing in primary care when I was expected to give antibiotics to all my patients who had viral infections. And I could not do that. That wasn't part of my medical training. Yeah. And so I didn't do it. But as a result, I got horrible reviews from patients. But yet I was providing them the best care and any way you can sort of measure it. So that is a challenge. So I think there is a line over which you can't not cross.
Yeah. And again, like the question is, how do you provide that care? And sometimes there's no winning. Like if you tell a patient who wants a Z-Pack, this is a bad idea for you.
Now a Z-Dog? That's a different story.
You give that out PRN. PRN angst, PRN anger. Z-Dog is just ad libitum. See some more comments. I treat people like they want to be treated. Kindly, Amber Moser. Rachel Hignite. Let's get more shared governance. Real bedside nurses on committees that matter, not just BS. I like that. Yeah. People who are touching patients.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point because the people who are making the decisions about the ideal patient experience often are not in the trenches. And so I think nurses, physicians should all be at the table.
Pharmacists.
Really, everybody who has direct impact on patient care should be at the table trying to create this perfect.
Could you imagine like a PTOT at the table making decisions? Yeah. Like that'd be great. Pharmacists, nutritionists, social worker, case managers, like how important are they? Like crucial. And yet we don't have their voice at the table. So yeah, I agree 100%. Let's see. I've always lived by the rule, treat patients like they're your family member, Jason Stetz. I mean, that's goes without saying. Let's go in here because it's hot. And also because we're supposed to eat lunch at some point. And there we go. I don't know what's up with this this phone's there it is. This phone's exposure settings. But I no longer care because I'm Z-Dog MD. Y'all are gonna ignore me whether or not it looks good. PM Pediatrics does have it all. Our model has been experience-focused, cost-effective, and high-quality. Experience is our foundation and is a priority for all our staff to be involved in. Tony Hogenkamp. Now, that's great, assuming you're not just a suit who's telling us this. Because if you're someone who's not on the front lines and you're saying that, we are not going to trust you, honestly. Because you can say that all you want, and I've heard administrators say this, but they're not connected to the frontline experience. Which may be very different, or you may be absolutely right. So, let's see, what do we got here? How do you deal with a difficult patient who also happens to be a healthcare provider, doctors, nurses, Adam Miller? What a great question!
All the time.
All here. Let's go over here. Look at this. Hi. All right. What do you do with this, James Riddle?
It's hard. And so you just have to work with them, as a colleague, and you have to have develop a relationship in which you trust each other. I think that's the biggest thing you can do. And once you develop that trust, and you do have to put extra time and effort into it, you know, because this is somebody who's going to ask you lots of probing questions and have their own opinions. So you have to work very closely with that patient and just recognize right off the bat, you're going to have to put in a lot of extra time and effort, period.
Which sucks. We all know you have the doctor or the nurse, or better yet, the family member is like, my uncle is a doctor and you need to call him before you do anything. And you're like, okay, let me have a conversation. You do it once and you go, hey, listen, man, they're pulling the doctor card. Like, we're doing this and this and this. Do you think that's concordant with what you think? You know her well. All right, cool. Let us know if you need anything. Otherwise, don't ever talk to me again because you're insane. No, I'm kidding. It does happen. It happens quite a bit, especially at academic medical school because you get a lot of tertiary referrals and so on and so forth. So that being said, what do you think? Any parting thoughts before we have to go eat lunch?
No, I just think the point of engaging sort of all people at all levels in the healthcare profession to try to figure out what this ideal patient experience is, including the patients themselves, actually, which is something that seems obvious, but we haven't even talked about it at all.
Exactly.
But involving a patient, say, who comes to your clinic, you know, what do you think? Having focus groups, things like that, I don't see that happening a lot. What I do see happening are hired consultants, mm-hmm. Which are external entities that come in and try to tell you what to do. I don't think that's helpful. And
can you hear this, Jamie?
I'm against it.
Let me turn it up for you. This is what I.
That wasn't me.
That was not him, but that was me. Although I was using his arm to do it. It was a. No, it's just true though, right? You get these corporate consultants come in and they're like, "This is how you do it." That's not the way to do it. You get clinicians who are there. You come up with something that works, and you get patient voices. Yeah. So what we did at Turntable is we actually had a quarterly patient board meeting where the patients were on the board of
That's
directors,
great, I think, yeah.
And they would tell us what was working, what wasn't working, what they'd like to see better, and it was fantastic. And the docs are sitting right there, and we're all sitting right there, and we powwow. So that's one way to do it. Yeah. It's a little time intensive, but look, anything that's worth doing is worth doing well, as Mom and Dad used to say. So. Anyway, so should we walk over there and have we're eating the leftovers for lunch because it's post-Thanksgiving. We just did a hike. It's great to have the family in town, especially when they're docs and stuff, because then you can talk hella smack. And I can write the whole thing off because this is a show. Let's show them the table. It smells really good. Too bad you guys can't smell this right now because it's dope. All right, check it.
Should you show him the pig head?
Well, that we showed him the other day. Is that what it is? Is it the pig jowls?
This is
the
pig head right here.
Oh, yeah. The feet. There are a couple annoying vegan trolls that are on every post, and they saw our feast from the other day, and they're like, "That's disgusting. That animal is sentient." I'm like, "No, it was sentient because now it's dead, and we're going to eat it, and it's going to help us be more sentient." So on that note...
You get so much hate from
that. Oh, this is what I do. Look at my shirt. It says butthurt on it. Come on. I wish I wore hiking, and these guys were like, "Do you really have to wear that hiking?" I'm like, yes, I do. I need people to know. Anyway, so thanks to Dr. James Riddle, University of Michigan, infectious diseases clinical professor.
Thanks for including him in your show.
Oh,
it's a lot of fun.
You always bring an insight that I deeply lack. So on that note, we're going to end with – no, we're not going to do an ad because it's boring. We're just going to end and have a great Thanksgiving weekend. Peace. We out.